Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Public Broadcasting introduces you to the candidates of the 2018 election. You can find our conversations with candidates for the U.S. House on our website, listen.sdpb.org. We've welcomed Democratic candidate Tim Bjorkman, Republican candidate Dusty Johnson, and Libertarian candidate George Hendrickson. Today, we welcome Independent candidate Ron Wieczorek. Thank you so much for joining us today here in the Sioux Falls studio.
Well, thank you, Lori. I appreciate the opportunity.
Let's start talking about the economy. First, you get to the issues right out of the gate here, because the economic future of America is important to you. All economic indicators are looking strong right now. Are we on the right track? Are things going well, or is there a crisis brewing?
I really think there's a crisis brewing. I mean, to me, the world is drowning in debt right now. We've got $250-some trillion worth of debt around the world. 30% of that debt is owed by the United States of America. I mean, too much of our assets are nothing but worthless pieces of paper with fictitious values put to them on Wall Street. We've got five major banks in this country that have the two big to fail banks that have a derivative liability now in the quadrillions of the dollars. If one of them stumbles or something happens that they blow, we'll be in a much worse situation than we were in 2009 when we almost brought down the world economy.
Do you think there's a sense because that economic crisis was addressed in the way that it was, that there was a sense these banks are too big to fail, that Americans have slipped into a false sense of security, that if there is another economic crisis, those banks will be bailed out again? Or do you think people are more in tune than ever to the risks and what's at stake?
Well, my experience over the last month or two is that I think people are really waking up. I mean, the effects of the debt on them, and, you know, you can dress up the economy like it's being dressed up, but when you look at 72,000 people in the United States overdosing on opiate drugs, and many of those, most of that is prescription drugs, and we've got older people that are selling drugs on the street so they can buy a sandwich or pay their rent. That should never happen in America. I mean, we've got our student loan debt is overwhelming our young people. The corporate debt is overwhelming. I think we've got to address the fact that we've got a bankrupt system. And we're getting closer to a bankruptcy. It's either going to blow or we're going to orderly do it. And my whole program has been an educational process, going back over the history of the country and looked at looking at, you know, what created this country was Hamiltonian economics, national banking, state-created credits directed into specific areas of the economy. So you built infrastructure, educated the people, uplifted them mentally and spiritually, because I really think real wealth comes from between the ears as new ideas, and the only place you can get that is a new discovery is in one individual person's mind. That's what makes people sacred. And, you know, we need to get back to a system where we have mind over money rather than money determining who's going to live and die.
Tax reform and tax cuts that recently came out of Washington under the Republican Congress, are those a positive step in the right direction or more debt?
Actually, it's just another Band-Aid on a symptom that's caused by, you know, the wrong direction in our economy. If we don't address the economic issue and fix the cause to our problem, we can't fix all these little symptoms one at a time because there's not enough Band-Aids to patch them up. And, you know, as far as the tax cut, what we really need is to grow the income. That's how you pay off bills, not with austerity. Germany used austerity in the end, and look what they've done. They worked their people to death. I mean, we're doing almost the same thing. Most families now have to have 2-3 jobs to maintain 2 or 3 kids. That should never be. I mean, that's an injustice. to me, we've got too many people shuffling paper and not enough people doing productive, creative work. And you can't, we haven't built any major infrastructure in this country in 70 years. If half of the economy isn't building, you know, the future, your culture is going backwards. And as far as I'm concerned, we've got a lot of nice fancy buildings here, and we've been living off of real estate development and nothing to improve our energy crisis, nothing to really improve, you know, our transportation system. Our health care is almost a total mess. I mean, we don't need more insurance people. We need doctors and nurses. I mean, every county should have a hospital and a doctor and a doctors and nurses. We don't need, you know, all these health care people. I mean, all these insurance providers. I think we need to go to universal health care. It would be much cheaper in the long run. I mean, it would be a more efficient, a more effective means of taking care of our people. Again, you're back to a philosophical war that has to be won. How do you look at your fellow man? Is he sacred, or is he just another number on a piece of paper that you can manage and shuffle around like you do a herd of sheep? I think that, you know, we have to have a renaissance in this country. We have to provide for a classical culture education to our young people rather than, you know, giving them a test on their ability to remember the answer in the back of the book. I mean, that's a test for a parrot. That shouldn't be a test for a human being. These kids should be taught how to think, not what to think. They should be given a classical music at a very early age. Our 3- and 4-year-olds should be developed in a chorus of beautiful singing. That's what happened in the Renaissance during the Dark Ages in Europe. I mean, if you go to Europe and look at all the beautiful buildings over there, churches and government buildings, they all have these little cherubs on pictures of that look like angels with a rounded voice. That was their method of developing classical music, developing courses. You do that, and you have a mechanism by which you can teach the subconscious of the child lawfulness, orderliness, and harmony. It should be just like learning to speak.
As a parent with a child in a school district here in South Dakota, I can say that with certainty that they're really being taught how to think way more than I was at that age. Do you think there's still work there to be done? I mean, I can't think of the last time my daughter took a test where she had to memorize a fact. It's all about context and thinking and figuring things out.
Actually, I think the problem is, and I think there is a major problem. I think it's we've overloaded our school system and our curriculum with the logic, and now they're talking about artificial intelligence. The only way you can get artificial intelligence is with logic. Logic is a destroyer of creativity. I mean, actually, it prevents you from being in the image of God, because the only way you can come up with a new idea is a nonlinear method of jumping to a higher level of thinking or jumping to a new idea with your mind. And that is not something that can be done with logic, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's where we're missing the boat in our school systems. I think we really need to let these kids look for the answers within themselves and quit shoving them full of facts and then building logic on it. I mean, beautiful music, beautiful art are absolutely essential. Beautiful classical literature that paints metaphors in their minds rather than having to be stimulated by more louder music, by brighter colors, and so on and so forth. I think we need to get back to developing the imagination of our young people. That's the way you solve problems.
You mentioned the cost of student loans. That certainly feels like a crisis to many families across the country. And if voters chose to send you to Washington to represent them in Congress, what are some of the first things that you would do to address the cost of higher education?
Well, the first thing we're going to have to do is reinstate Glass-Steagall. Then we're going to have to set up a new national banking system, because the five too-big-to-fail banks they're going to be blowing out very soon. I mean, I don't know. There's no way they can be bailed out by the federal government with the debt they hold. So the first thing has to be an overhauling of our financial system. I look at China. They're moving with the American system. I mean, they've taken 800 million people out of poverty in the last 25 years, basically. They've got 172 cities of over a million people. We set with seven. We beat our chest and act like we're the best in the world, but I think we don't even know what the American system is anymore. I mean, we've let British free trade, 25 years of British free trade, GATT and NAFTA, basically they were set up by Wall Street and London speculators to loot the working faction in the productive sector of Europe and America. And you can look at the situation in Europe. I mean, practically every government is on the verge of failing. 25 years of free trade was supposed to do something besides that. And I really appreciate Mr. Trump's effort on dumping NAFTA. I think actually NAFTA is dead now. I think we're moving in the right direction. But there's other things that have to be done, and we have to address the issue that we have to have a new Bretton Woods. We have to have an agreement with Russia and China on pegging our national currency so these speculators can't change the value of them every second with a computer. I mean, you can't fix a barn if you're going to change the ruler every 10 seconds. You couldn't build a house that way. So it's a responsibility of our government by our Constitution to maintain the value of our currency. That's one thing. That's one of the reasons I want to be the representative from South Dakota. I mean, we've got to get back to the principles and ideas that expressed this country. Principles and ideas are what built this country. It wasn't money and guns.
Let's go back to something you said about Glass-Steagall. Explain to listeners what that is exactly. Reinstitute Glass-Steagall.
Glass-Steagall was basically implemented with the help of the greatest South Dakota senator that lived, Peter Norbeck, in 1932 as a Republican. He was the head of the Senate Banking Commission, and he called for an investigation of what happened in 1929, which is the same thing that happened in 2009 with derivatives and speculation overwhelming the working sector, the productive sector. And they put a law on the books called Glass-Steagall that separated the speculators in New York, the investment bankers, from the commercial banks. The commercial banks are the ones that hold our deposits, make loans to us. But in 2009, they took that law off the books, and commercial banks become investment banks. Investment banks become commercial banks. And the speculators had an open door because they bought up over that period of time, almost 9,000 commercial banks. So they had the people's deposits under their control. They speculated with them, gave themselves billion-dollar bonuses, and it was all under the protection of the American taxpayer. And that was the biggest bailout in the history of the world, designed to save the United States. Bull Roar. That was designed to save a bunch of bankster crooks on Wall Street. And what I liked about Peter Norbeck, there's a nice cartoon from 1933 in the Sioux City Journal where he's chasing the New York bankers with a pitchfork. And he actually, with his help in the commission and Ferdinand Pecaro, the prosecuting attorney that they finally ended up with, they put bankers away in jail at that time. In 2009, when the same thing happened, only much worse than back then, what did we do? Senator Johnson, who was the head of the Senate Banking Commission, basically gave him a bonus and a bailout. Today, they're worse off than they were in 2009 with their leveraged derivatives, the way they have leveraged into derivatives right now. We're talking about a quadrillion dollars worth of liabilities. If that crumbles this time, the government and nobody can bail that out. I mean, we're done, and we're already losing value, face value around the world, because Russia went through a similar thing in 2000 when their government had to file bankruptcy, and basically they sold everything to anybody that had cash in their hands. and the system was bankrupt. But then Putin come in, and then basically Glazhev, who I've been at conferences with, basically is his economic advisors. Glazhev understands what I've got in a flyer that I've been putting out, almost 25,000 of them since I started now. And they're moving towards the Hamiltonian economic system. Actually, they're a superpower again today in a very short few years. So when I look at China and Russia moving with our economic system, and American people don't seem to know what it is anymore, I mean, we have to have an educational process very rapidly. And in times of crisis, that happens. People open their minds. They're looking for answers. And I think we have an opportunity here before it blows to get the mechanism in place that can prevent total chaos.
Let's talk about America's relationship with China, because President Trump, who you said you're in strong support of many of his policies, has tried to redefine the relationship with China.
Definitely. This East-West division has to be ended. I mean, right now, yesterday and today, China has got a conference going on with 52 African nations. What they've done in China, they are now going to do in Africa. We should have done that after World War II when we rebuilt all of Europe and Japan and many other sectors of the world, and we created very productive people in sovereign nation states that have done a lot of business with us, and we've made a lot of money off of them. Franklin Roosevelt actually wanted to move into Africa, Mexico, and South America with the same type of development that we done for Japan and Europe back then. If we had done that, and he had lived, we'd have 2 billion people today that we with money in their pockets that could buy and do business with us. But we went with British Free Trade. We went with NAFTA and GATT. Both countries now are competing on the least cost production areas of the world, the slave labor camps. I mean, we've destroyed Mexico. The people in Mexico that had a wage prior to 1994, I mean, today they're making less money than they did in 1994. There's no way they can even make enough money off of one salary down there to maintain themselves, let alone a family. So they either get in drugs to try to make money, or they sneak across the border as an illegal alien, try to pick up some money here. And what did we do to our country? I mean, we took, like, the Maytag factory in Des Moines, Iowa. We took and shut down that factory, sent it to Mexico. They were getting $33 an hour over there on the average. They were paying more in income tax than the people get in a salary in Mexico that are working in the same plant. I mean, we destroyed ourselves. We destroyed Mexico by tolerating that insanity.
Do you see a future where the United States is a lot allied with China and Russia versus our European and North American partners that we've been too close to over the years?
I see a relationship with Russia and China, and our president is pushing for that. But we can't ignore our friends in Europe. I mean, we have to invite them in. The BRICS nations have basically set up a new financial system. We should be leading it. It's based on our principles, the Hamiltonian economics. I mean, FDR economics. We need to include everybody in, but we need to provide for a system of sovereign nation states, sovereign individuals, and sovereign currencies. So everybody's in control of their country or their area or their culture.
President Trump is coming, is scheduled to come to South Dakota later on this week. In our remaining moments, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the positive aspects of his presidency that you feel maybe have been overlooked.
Well, this morning when I got up, I made a list of things that I thought Mr. Trump had done right. And we've already talked about some of them, but I'll repeat them again. We're seeing a break with the imperial divide between the East and West, which I strongly approve. He rejects free trade, which I strongly approve. He's even come out, in his campaign with a statement that we need to reinstate Glass-Steagall. So he understands what I'm talking about, I believe. I think the London Wall Street control, they want to control the money system. And they've been the opposition to they are the campaign to destroy our Hamiltonian economic system. That's why they don't want us to go with Russia and China. Another thing I think he, the way I understand from what he, the aspect he's going at it, he certainly thinks global warming is a hoax, which I actually believe it was. It was basically an empire globalist hoax to convince the world that there's limits to growth. And there is no such thing. As long as you've got well-developed minds coming up with new ideas, we can create all sorts of new things. Trump opposes he's opposed to the legalization of drugs, which is another beautiful thing in my book. And we need to stop this witch hunt against him right now.
You talked about an appreciation for science and education, though. So it surprises me to hear you say that you think the climate science from so many scientists that agree to be a hoax.
I truly believe it is. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think the media has done the enemy a favor by repeating this stuff, because there's many scientists out there that say the opposite. I saw one article where there's like 1,000 scientists that have decided the other way. There's a global warming effect going on, but it's not because of man. It's because the Earth is moving through the solar system. The solar system is moving through the galaxy, and there's a cycle that it goes through the galaxy. And we've been in warm ages before. We've been in ice ages. We've got to use the power of the human mind to adjust to whatever's happening in the galaxy. Galactic citizens very soon.
We're going to have to stop there. Ron Wazorek, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate your time. He's an independent candidate for U.S. House. You can hear our conversations with candidates Tim Bjorkman, Dusty Johnson, and Jordan Hendrickson on our website, listen.sdpb.org.